Are you ready to become awesomer? Hello everyone, my name is Umar Hamid. I'm your host on the No Limit Selling Podcast, where industry leaders share their tips, strategy, and advice on how you can become better, stronger, faster. Just before we get started, I've got a question for you. Do you have a negative voice inside your head? We all do, right? I'm gonna help you remove that voice in under 30 days guaranteed. Not only remove it, but transform it. So instead of the voice that sabotages you, there's one that propels you to much higher levels of performance and success. There's a link in the show notes. Click on it to find out more. All right, let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the No Limit Selling Podcast. And one of the things I heard a long time ago, which you've probably heard as well, is, you know, what's the purpose of business? And the purpose of business is to make profit. And I think business is the strongest movement for change in the world. A lot of advances that have happened in our lives in terms of technology, medicine, health, social infrastructure have all come from business, because that's what moves the needle forward. And there's so many brilliant people out there with brilliant ideas, but unless you have an ability to acquire clients, you're not going to see revenue. And if you don't see revenue, baby, you ain't going to see profits. And today we have the privilege of having Zach Stuckey with us here today. He's an expert at strategically figuring out how to get clients. Zach, welcome to the program. And why don't you give us like a quick rundown on who you are and why you're here?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Umar. So my name's Zach Stuckey, and I'm a business strategist. And basically what I do is I help businesses understand the real reason why their clients are hiring them, so that they can design their strategy and their operations around that to create pull. So their sales and their marketing becomes a lot more effortless at attracting these clients.
How to be more attractive. Absolutely. 100%. So give me your definition of what is the definition of strategy, so everyone's on the same page. And go ahead. What is strategy?
Yeah. So this is a great place to start, because you're right. Everybody looks at strategy at a different way. The way that I look at strategy is strategy. So you've got vision, strategy, and then tactics, right? Vision is I want to this. Strategy is 50,000 foot view, painting with a broad brush. How are we going to get there? And then the tactics are, how do we achieve this step in that broad strategic picture, right? So it's like, if my goal is to be the largest car wash in the United States, then I need to map out, okay, who are the competitors, and where do I want to start, and things like that. That's all the vision. Okay. The strategy is, okay, so I start in this location with this many bays in my car wash, with this many employees, it takes this much money. The tactics are, how do I find the employees? How do I get the money? How do I bring the customers to the car wash? And then the strategy would be, okay, by this time, I'm going to expand to this many car washes in this many states. The tactics are, okay, how do I actually go and expand and become a multi-state operation instead of a single state operation? So it's kind of like a big funnel that just kind of goes broader to narrower the closer you get to your tactics.
All right. So let me kind of challenge that a little bit so we get clarity, because, you know, that's ultimately through discourses where we get insight. So I would say if I wanted to be the biggest car wash in North America, like the go-to giant, where people think of car wash, they think of Umar, Mr. Clean. I'll have to shave my head first. But anyway, then the strategy. So the vision would be that I want to be the number one car wash dude in North America. The strategy would be going, okay, what is a way that I can outthink and outpace my competition and outthink what's happening in the future? It's almost like we're divining what the economic climate is going to be in the future. And we say, okay, this is my strategy, how to meet the next upturn in the economy that we've got 20 locations in Canada that we're dominating. And that would be strategy. And part of strategy is very much the competition, economics, my ability to borrow money and all that stuff. And the tactics would be, okay, what are the steps I need to do this year to reach that milestone? So it's similar to yours, almost identical. I just put competition and some of that stuff more in the strategy space and not the vision space.
Yeah, but I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair. And I think that, you know, the place where we agree is that they're both the bigger side of the funnel.
Absolutely. Right? There was a really brilliant guy. I think his name was Dr. Jacques. And he was talking about, if you take a look at CEOs in most companies, one of the mechanisms that they have that may have gotten them to the CEO level is they have the ability to see 5 to 10 years out into the future. And managers have the ability to see a year out into the future. And hourly workers have the ability to see to next Friday. And one of the reasons they're hourly workers is because of their vision only extends that far. Mm-hmm. And why CEOs tend to be CEOs is they can see further out. And if you are a small business owner, you have to be able to do all three, because initially you're the janitor and the CEO of the organization. So Zach, tell me about one of your clients that you started working with, and where they had a strategy in place. And when you looked at who they were and what they were doing, that you said, okay, that is a strategy, but here's a better one. So when you can change the name to protect the innocent, but kind of give us one of those, because when you're too close to the situation, sometimes you can't see the opportunity and you need somebody from the outside to come in and say, oh my God, you're missing the big opportunity here. So walk us through one of those examples.
Yeah. So do you want big or small?
Let's pick small and then we'll go to the big one a little later on.
Okay. So I was working with a guy. He was doing some marketing coaching. He was about 350,000, 360,000 gross revenue.
That's good revenue.
Yeah, it's great revenue. But he was starting to build himself a cage, basically. Hmm. And that's one of the problems that I see with a lot of business owners when it comes to growth. And on a strategic level, basically, they've got this vision in place of, I want to do X. And then they've got this strategy, which, like we talked about, that basic understanding of like what the market space looks like, who the competition is, things like that. But the biggest problem is their tactical implementation doesn't match up with the strategy and the vision. So this guy that I was working with, what was going on is that he was basically saying, we're going to do this thing, and then I'm going to offer coaching on a weekly basis. We'll have two coaching calls. And, you know, we'll base our business off of that. And I sat down with him and I said, you may not realize it now, but you're building yourself a prison, because here's the thing is that as you bring more clients in, they're going to rely on you to do that delivery. You will build a team that's built to support you in the delivery of the,
by the way, client. Guilty. You're describing me. Please go on.
Okay. So, well, here's the tricky part, right? Is that a lot of times, and I may get in trouble with this, Umar, but just bear with me. So a lot of times when people do that group coaching method, mm-hmm. they're building this team to support them. And they're thinking, okay, if I do one to many instead of one to one, I'll be able to service more clients, build my impact, and grow my business, mm-hmm. which is partially true, but you reach a plateau, which is based off of your ability to deliver. Because again, the team is built to support you. So the only way that you can break that is by understanding the real reason why your customer is hiring you. We call this the job to be done. There was a Harvard business professor named Clayton Christensen. And about 20 years ago, he kind of started toying with this idea that customers don't buy your product or service. They hire it to help them make progress in their life. And if you understand what that progress is, then you can design your operations, your sales and marketing, your whole business structure, your whole model around delivering on that progress. And so that's what I helped this business do. And it was a fast turnaround, Umar. They were quick. They went from a place where they were, you know, they had about 10 clients doing pretty good to a place where the CEO was literally closing 5 sales a day because wow. they were able to deliver so well on this job that the customer was hiring them to do.
So let me interject there. If I understand correctly, what you ended up doing was the initial product of the company was the CEO.
Yes.
And what you went was said, okay, you're not the product anymore. The solution is the product. And that way many people can deliver it and it's not incumbent on you, because a lot of consultants end up just basically creating their own job. And when they get more employees, more clients, oftentimes they're not further ahead. The revenue's larger for the company, but the expenses are too. And what you're describing is something that's very scalable. Have I got it right?
Exactly. 100%. You nailed it.
I told you I was smarter than I looked. People don't believe me. And one of the reasons that I'm smarter than I look is this, because it's all about mindset. This is one of our sponsors. Say hello, everyone. Ready to let go of anxiety, let go of uncertainty, let go of doubt. Mindset Boosters gives you the ability to decide how you act and feel in any situation. Ready to take charge of your mindset? Go to mindsetboosters.com. So let's talk about mindset, Zach. Sometimes you've got clients that are coming in and they want something better, but they're not willing to do the things they need to do because somewhere in their mindset is, well, if you want it done right, you have to do it yourself. Or there's intellectually they trust their staff, but deep down it's like, can't trust them. So talk to me about how important mindset is and what do you do when you don't have the right mindset? How do you start changing it to get in the right space to get the job done?
Yeah. Mindset is critical. Mindset is critical. I had a mentor tell me, you can only grow your business as far as your mindset allows. And I firmly believe that. Because here's the thing, is that if you're stuck in this, I call it the project-focused worldview, which is I'm the product like you described, or each client that comes through the door is an individualized project, and we reinvent the wheel for each project, you're never going to scale your business. That will never get you where you want to go.
So pause right there just for a second. Sorry to interrupt, but I think it's an important point. Is I would bet that someone that's doing that, creating a tailor-made thing for this unique snowflake that's coming in to their business, that that snowflake is 90% identical to every other snowflake they've done. But the illusion is that I need to be there and I have to craft this, curate this experience for them, when the reality is it's the same freaking thing. And so absolutely 100%, I agree. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. And let's even go a level deeper, because when they do that, they're actually harming the quality of their offering because they have to start from the ground up each time, even though, just like you said, it's 75 to 95% identical with the one that came before it, because your customers are hiring you to do a job, to make progress. And that progress is largely identical or very, very similar. And so the more you systematize, the higher your quality goes up. There is an inverted U-curve relationship here. Mm-hmm. But by and large, the businesses that we're talking about here, you know, these low six figure, maybe low seven figure businesses, they're still on the gaining end of that U curve, where the more they can systematize and standardize across their processes, the more they will see an increase in their profitability. But here's the thing. They're going to be able to start creating products and services that have pull, that actually pull in their clients, because the more they recognize and design their business or service around the job that the client is hiring them to do, the more scalable it becomes. And I'll give you a brief example. So a couple of years ago, I was working with a business in a highly specialized niche in a very competitive vertical in a very specific market. And you'd think, well, you know, the strategy is very clear. You do this, you do that, you do the next thing, and bada bing, bada boom, you reach a certain plateau, and that's about as big as you can get. Well, what we were able to do is we looked at it and we said, okay, what is the job our customer is hiring us to do here? And we realized we didn't have one customer, we had two customers. So we added a level of complexity here. We had the user, right? And then we had the person who was referring the user over. So we had to meet the jobs for both people. So our sales and marketing and our policies and procedures were oriented around the referrer.
Right.
And our actual operations were oriented around the job of the user. Mm. And basically, we were able to hit 40% year-over-year growth rates for multiple years in a row. We took the business from a place where the owners were having to take out loans in order to cover payroll to being an eight-figure business in 4 years.
Superb. Thank you for sharing that. Very much, I think if you can get a process in place, no one's going to get a process in place that really sucks. Like they're experts in the business and they're going to do something that, let's say, the world's best person in this arena might get 100%. If they've been doing it for a while, at worst case, they're going to come in at 75%, let's say. So still pretty decent. But as soon as you have a process in place, then if you've got the ability to inquire into the process, what could we change that would give me a 2% improvement? Or ask the customer, how was this? Yeah. That you start tweaking it, and within 3 or 4 months, you're going to get up into the 90s. If you're in the 90s, you're in the top 10% of all purveyors of this kind of stuff in the world, and that's where you make serious money. So if you don't have a process, you can't improve it.
Exactly. And you know, I love Pixar's mindset when it comes to this. They say, we know it sucks. How can we make it suck less? Mm. And they really go for those marginal gains of 1%. If you work the math out, if you get a 1% gain every single day, that's it. Just 1%. By the end of 1 year, you will 37X your previous year's quality, profitability, revenue, whatever. But that's just by these marginalized 1% gains. That's called Kaizen, which is another form of operations management. It's just a methodology that they've laid out, and businesses can implement this stuff. But the key for me, and I love that you said this, Umar, is just get the dang thing in place. Just get the process in place. It doesn't have to be pretty, but you get it in place with the mindset around what is the job or the progress our customer is hiring them to make. And then we get these marginalized 1% gains every single day. We make sure that they're codified and that we're training our team on it. And then you like you said, by the end of a year, you're in that top 10%. You're a
ninja.
Yes, a ninja. Great way to describe it.
All right. So we live in a new world right now with technology that's out there. Certainly AI is helping a lot. And so what are some tools that you would recommend that businesses should start using? And let's take a look at, you know, what the tools do and how they can make money from utilizing those to be more effective or sexier or stronger.
Yeah. So the tools that I recommend aren't sexy in and of themselves, but dang, they make your business look sexy. So the first thing is the customer interview. So this is a one-on-one interview where you sit down with your customer and you say, hey, you had a really crappy day one day where you made a decision that you needed to change. Now, this isn't the day that you decided to buy our product or hire our service. That's not the day. We're just looking at the day that you decided that you had to change the status quo. Tell me about that day.
Right.
And basically what you're doing is you're building a picture of this struggling moment that the client had and a picture of what their promised land looks like so that you can build the bridge. Now, most people would say that the sale is the bridge, but I push back on that. And I say that your deliverable is the bridge. That's the job that your client is hiring you to help them do. The sale is showing them the bridge and showing them that the bridge actually gets them where they want to go.
And I'm going to add one more thing to that.
Please do.
Showing that is possible for them. Because oftentimes people go, yeah, that's right, Zach. You know, like the guy down the street can do it, but I'm not sure I can do it. And I think part of that when you come in as a consultant is creating that foundation and safety that allows them to suspend the fear a little bit. Because if they suspend the fear a little bit, they can more easily see the vision as something real for them.
Yes.
At the end of the day, it's our own fears and anxieties that stop us from being fabulous. And there's a quote from an old comic strip called Pogo. It was like the Second World War kind of arena. And it said, we have met the enemy, and the enemy is us.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so consultants come in, we do these amazing things. So what's the tool? So one of the, you know, a lot of buzz is around ChatGPT as one of the AI tools.
Yeah.
And some of the things that we're finding it to be really useful for us is the transcript from our conversation is going to be amazing, Zach, that no one will ever read. Not even Google. Well, one of the things we do is we're going to feed this transcript into ChatGPT and say, could you make an FAQ out of this conversation?
Yeah.
And it's going to, it'll take it like 15 minutes, but it's going to say, here was a question and here's how it was answered. And that's what Google likes is very much, if you got a question, I can answer it for you. And so that's a good example of saving a lot of time. If I got one of my colleagues to go through the transcript to organize it in terms of question answers more succinctly, it would take 3 hours. This one, mm-hmm. you put the transcript in, hit go. 15 minutes later, you've got this kick-ass amazing FAQ that makes our website more useful, the podcast more useful. And we take it from there. And also we write the summary of this podcast. No matter how well you're going to write it or I'm going to write it, ChatGPT is going to listen to the transcript and go, oh, this is what it was really about. So that's one tool. Your turn, Zach. What's another tool people can use? It might even be the same tool for another purpose. What's a tool you recommend that users can use?
So another tool that I recommend users take advantage of are things like Publer. So Publer is a very simple online tool that allows them to post across multiple social media platforms all at once. And I love it. So it's really powerful, especially when you combine it with something like ChatGPT to help you write the content. So I'll walk you through a theoretical process here.
Love it.
So you've done the client interviews, you understand the job that your customers are hiring you to do. You plug that into ChatGPT and you talk about, this is the struggles that they're having. Help me write a social media post about this. Or help me brainstorm a social media post about this. Because I'll be honest, ChatGPT, it's good, but when it comes to like actual copywriting, I think it still isn't quite ready for the presses yet. And so I use it to brainstorm, and then I will take and hand that brainstorming over to a copywriter and say, okay, you know, make this better.
Bingo.
And that's the power. Because it's what's called a force multiplier. It takes the force that you're putting into it and it magnifies it out. It 10Xs it. So it's like instead of taking, like you talked about, 3 hours to get a summary of this conversation, you do it in 15 minutes and then you've got another 45 minutes, well, 2 hours and 45 minutes that you can then redirect on other things that are going to have a greater impact.
Like meth.
Well, I hope you're not doing meth.
How do you think I got stuck up in your interview? Oh, Zach. Then it was like, oh, Zach. So going back to what you just described. So your copywriter, whoever that person is, I can guarantee 100% their first draft of whatever they write is not going to be that great mm-hmm. compared to what the final draft will be. And I also agree, ChatGPT is amazing for getting that first draft done. Mm-hmm. And then you get somebody who's really talented that can make it better. Because if you post it just as it's written by ChatGPT, I'm not sure how the hell these freaking people figure it out, but Google's going to figure out this was not written by a human and it's going to delist it from the search results. So using that as a force multiplier to get the first draft done is genius, but then you come in and add to it. So I've got one of my worker bees basically putting something into ChatGPT, hopefully they've already done it, which is like, here are the six, we do a lot of coaching for people, but realtors are one of the groups that we play with. You know, six things people need to consider when they hire a real estate coach.
Yeah.
And that's going to come to me. When it comes to me, we're going to add the seventh thing, which is what I do, and then just edit some of that. And it'll just make it a better post. It'll just shorten the time. So good job on ChatGPT. And also Publer, something that, you know, publishes out. I'm not sure Publer does this, but there is a CRM called Agent CRM. And one of the things it does is when people interact with the post, we know that Zach's in our database in the CRM. He interacted with the post and it lets us know this is what Zach said and it ties it to your profile. So when we go and we we can start having that conversation on social media, but it's captured in one space. And what it does is it highlights whenever somebody in our CRM interacts with anyone on our posts, we know that that's somebody we definitely want to talk to, as opposed to a random stranger, which we also want to talk to, but it's not as critical as somebody that's already engaging with us.
Right. Publer does not do that. It is just a scheduling tool,
which is a huge benefit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But that CRM sounds like a great tool, especially for businesses that have big lead lists in their CRMs that they need to be sure that they're actively engaging with.
Absolutely. So, is there another tool you'd recommend?
So I'm going to go a little bit more philosophical again here, and this is bottleneck rules. Mm. So every process in your business has a bottleneck.
Yes.
And you have to understand what that bottleneck is and manage it, because that bottleneck sets the limit for what you're able to do revenue-wise in your business. It just caps it. So there are five rules that I talk about that businesses need to understand in order to effectively manage their bottleneck. And they're pretty simple. The first one is know what your bottleneck is. The second one is manage your business to the pace of the bottleneck, meaning, you know, only give the bottleneck work when it's ready to work. Don't have this big stack up of work. There's a lot more nuance that we can go into. The third one is make sure that you're not giving the bottleneck any bad work. And bad work is defined as work that isn't prepared, work that is defective, or work that that bottleneck shouldn't be doing in the first place.
Okay. Just before you go further, give me an example of a bottleneck in a process that you had in your company or one of your clients so we get a better understanding of it. Because it just sounds like code word for a really bad employee.
Okay. Great question. So a bottleneck, we'll use the example of a medical practice, right? So mm-hmm. A medical practice, a lot of times, you know, let's say it's an OBGYN. So they'll have an in-house ultrasonographer that's taking ultrasounds of the patient. You'll also have the actual physician. So in this, there are two bottlenecks. There's the physician, and they have a whole process that they're working, and they have a bottleneck because they can only meet with one client at a time. And right. The only way that you can get more work out of that bottleneck is to either make it work longer hours or have it have shorter consultative periods with the patient. Mm-hmm. The second process is the ultrasound technician. And the bottleneck in that instance is the technician, because the technician, they can only be doing one scan at a time. They're not good enough to go, all right, here we go. All right, there's your baby over there. There's your baby over there. Like they're good, but they're not that good. And so they are the bottleneck on that system. And so you manage the bottleneck, or you manage the system to the bottleneck, so that the bottleneck is basically always staying busy. Because when the bottleneck is working, you're generating revenue. When it's not working, you're not. You're spending money.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. That really helps. And of course, a joke came in my mind as you were talking about an ultrasound technician. Then you have a flaky technician. All right, good. So identifying the bottlenecks, huge. So adding to that from my end as a really good tool, this is just one that some people use, and it's the autopsy. And usually when they use it, when something goes wrong, this went really bad with client. We need to figure out what went wrong. Let's see what the steps were. Where did we go wrong? So most companies don't do that. Mm-hmm. But truly great companies take a look at when stuff goes right for a client as well. How are we exceptional? What do we do different this time that allowed that exceptional result? It's like, oh, our receptionist said this at the beginning of the process that just queued up the client to have a great experience. Normally we don't do that. Let's add that in. So I think adding the autopsy to good stuff and bad stuff is critically important, because that's the only way we improve, is if we figure out what the frick did we do?
Yeah. No, I love this. I'm having a party in my head right now, Umar, because here's the thing is, you can take that autopsy and that, you know, the kudos meeting, whatever you want to call it. You can take that and you can say, okay, let's give this thing some context. Let's contextualize it around the job that our customer is hiring us to do. And basically what you've done is create a quasi framework that your team can use to then say, how do we innovate our process to make it better for the client so that the client is making progress faster, cheaper, or, you know, more effectively. And when you do that, you're able to, it's basically called sustaining innovation, and sustaining innovations grow your market share. So you're able to create these products or services that have even better pull. There was a company in Ireland called Intercom, and Intercom is a SaaS company, and they started as a 5 million market cap business. And they had massive churn problems. Customers would sign up, they'd use it a couple of times, and then they'd cancel their subscription. And the CEO, Des Trainor, he says, I got to figure out what's going on. We got to solve this problem. So he starts digging around. He discovers this jobs theory and this concept of the customer progress. And he says, we're orienting around this. So they start doing customer interviews, and they identify the jobs that customers are hiring them to do. And they say, instead of selling based off of features and benefits, we're selling based off of the job. Instead of onboarding based off of a feature suite, we're onboarding based off of the job. Churn disappeared almost overnight. And the other thing that they saw is massive growth. Within 10 years, they grew from that 5 million to 10.7 billion market cap.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that story. And I think it, so this would be my next hack to help grow, is your clients need to be listened to. And we spend so much time knowing what they want, or we ask them what they want, but we ask it in a way that it's just check it off my checklist. We spoke to some clients, and what we need to do is to do some deep listening. And one of the ways to do that is very much asking them this question: Zach, how will you know that we did a great podcast interview? This is a legit question. How will you know that we did a great podcast interview today? What would you be able to see, hear, or physically feel that will let you know we did a good job? So how would you answer that question?
You know, for me, I'd say that, you know, getting a lot of eyeballs on this podcast interview would be a huge, huge win, I think. Making sure that businesses are actually listening to what we're talking about and implementing is another huge win. And a little bit selfishly, getting more people to sign up for my email and getting some sales, that would be a big win for me, just being totally transparent.
And so just when you build up enough rapport with your clients, if you can just ask them that question, they'll tell you exactly what they want. And then, of course, being a consultant, helping them figure out what the true problem is, what the job is, because oftentimes they don't even know what the job is. It's like, I want this fixed over here. And you go, okay, let's take a look at that. Let's kind of break it down. And that comes through listening and asking really intelligent questions. So, Zach, I want to give you the last word on this. What's one piece of advice you want people that are listening to this interview to have that would make their lives easier, better, and be more profitable?
The piece of advice that I would have is, if we're getting specific, I would say buy the book Demand Side Sales 101. If you're not going to hire me, buy that book.
Yes.
And read that book, because that book lays out a really great framework for how to understand the job that your client is hiring you to do. Really solid foundation there. And the reason why is because once you understand the job, you can do it better, build those products that have pull. You can have anyone deliver it instead of you delivering it. So you're no longer the product. The offer is the product. The progress is the product. And you are able to build a business that can have an impact in the world, which is my personal, that's my mission, is to help businesses have an impact in the world, because entrepreneurs are good people. They're fundamentally good people, because what they're doing is they're saying, I'm going out into the world to serve others. And I can think of no more noble thing than that.
Brilliant. Great words to end on. Zach, thanks so much for being on the program. I really enjoyed our conversation. Stay with me as we say goodbye to our audience.
If you enjoyed this episode, please go to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating.
And if you're looking for more tools, go to my website at nolimitselling.com. I've got a free mind training course there that's going to teach you some insights from the world of neuro-linguistic programming, and that is the fastest way to get better results.